What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, it is finally here. The Final Four is this weekend on Saturday, and we have some excellent matchups coming up this weekend. I mean, all four of the number one seeds have made it to the Final Four, and that just means you're going to get some great games here because we got the best teams who have been the best teams all season long here at the end. So the first matchup we have is Auburn versus Florida. By the way, predicted this would be the Final Four matchup. As a matter of fact, my Final Four is 3 out of 4 intact. Instead of Duke, I had Arizona there. So I was right on Auburn, Florida, and Houston. But my championship is still intact as well, as well as my champion. The Auburn versus Florida matchup, this is going to be a good one. I mean, it's already been a good one. We've already seen what they look like in the regular season since these are two SEC teams. They've already played each other. And so I'm expecting this one to be a battle. Right now, Florida is favored, as they should be, because, really, if you look at it, Florida overall looks like the best team left in college basketball. It's just when you're talking about as far as offense, defense, and just all around how they play the game, they just really are an excellent team, but so is Auburn. And since my championship, I picked Auburn to go, I'm going to go ahead and still stick with Auburn. I think Auburn's going to give them a hell of a time. I think it's going to be a battle all the way to the end. Wouldn't be shocked if this one ended up going into some type of overtime, just because that's how close I expect this one to be. But of course, I'm going to stick with Auburn, and I've got them moving on to the championship. Then the second matchup we have between Duke versus Houston. In this matchup, I already picked Houston to win it all, as a matter of fact. So, of course, I'm going to be picking them in this matchup, even though Duke is favored, as they should be. I mean, Duke has been an excellent team as well. But I just think it's, like I said when I first started talking about my bracket, is I just think it's Houston's time. They play excellent basketball. They've been pushed to the brink in some of these games. They've been hovering around the top 10 all season long. As a matter of fact, I think they've been top 5 all season long. They've snagged the number one spot. And to me, they've just been one of the best teams all season. And I think they're going to continue that. I feel like this is going to be a close matchup as well. But I have Houston moving on, since that is who I had winning it all. So, of course, my national championship matchup remains Auburn versus Houston, with Houston as my choice to win it all. But we'll see what happens with the Final Four on Saturday. Then, of course, it was basically the beginning of baseball season, the first week of baseball. And we had a lot going on already in the first week, beginning with, I mean, everybody started making a big deal out of how many home runs the Yankees had in their first weekend of baseball because of the almighty torpedo bats. Well, come to find out, a lot of people around the league are using these torpedo bats, including Ellie De La Cruz, who had a fantastic game on Monday night against the Texas Rangers. The Cincinnati Reds smashed the Rangers 14-3, and Ellie De La Cruz went 4-for-5 with 2 home runs, 7 RBI, which is career high for him, and a stolen base, and he was using a torpedo bat that night. So I didn't really hear anybody throwing a temper tantrum like they did over Ellie De La Cruz, like they did over the Yankees, but hate to break the news to you people, it's a thing, and it's not just the Yankees who are using it. I know it's real easy for everybody to get all upset over what the Yankees are doing, but sorry, the rest of the league is using them too. Also on Monday night, the A's, you know, playing in Sacramento this year, are actually for the next 3 seasons, but they had their opening game on Monday night in Sacramento, and we'll just say it didn't go as planned for them. The Chicago Cubs came in and absolutely obliterated them, 18-3. Not only was it a complete and utter annihilation by the Cubs, but we had our first cycle of the season. Yes, that's right. In the first week of baseball, we have already had somebody hit for the cycle, and that would be Chicago Cubs player Carson Kelly. He went 4-for-4 with a home run and 5 runs. And of course, he hit for the cycle, which means he had a single, a double, a triple, and a home run. And usually that, I think that's actually the earliest it's ever been done in the season so far, too. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure I heard that the other day. But still, even if it's not the earliest, it's still pretty early in the season to be having it. And especially when it's the first game in Sacramento, and it's not you, the home team, who does it, you don't really like to open up the season that way, but they sure did. But Chicago, the Cubs, phew, offensively, they look really damn good. You know, I'm not shocked by that. But 18-3, that's something else. And they've actually offensively so far to start the season been on fire. So we'll see if that continues. Then on Tuesday, the Arizona Diamondbacks had a great game against the New York Yankees. It was a back and forth game all the way from start to finish up until the point where Eugenio Suarez, third baseman of the Arizona Diamondbacks, walked right up and hit a grand slam on the Yankees to put the Diamondbacks up 7-5. Corbin Carroll also had a home run in the game. It was really actually just an overall excellent offensive game from both teams in this Yankees game. But the Diamondbacks were able to get the better of them on Tuesday night. And then on Wednesday, we have two undefeated teams remaining in baseball, and they just so happen to be in the same division. As a matter of fact, it is crazy. The National League West is the teams there right now. Of course, the Dodgers playing fantastic, the Padres playing fantastic, but also my San Francisco Giants. I mean, it's real early, so I'm not getting too excited about it, but they took it to the Houston Astros this week. But they aren't undefeated like the Padres and the Dodgers are. Those are the two remaining undefeated teams. On Wednesday, the Padres beat the Cleveland Guardians 5-2. They are now 7-0 on the season, which is their best start in their entire franchise. Jackson Merrill, who just signed his contract extension this week, he went 2-for-4 with a home run and two RBI on the win over the Guardians. But this San Diego Padres team, I don't know if they're going to be able to keep it up because it is very, very early. But pitching looks solid. Bullpen looks solid. But offensively, they are a force. Now, there's quite a few teams who are playing fantastic offensively to start the season, and the Padres are one of them. But, you know, the 7-0 start is exactly what they want to see. But then the Dodgers, they have started the season off 8-0. So these are the two only undefeated teams in the same exact division, which is crazy. But they took out the Braves 6-5 on Wednesday. Shohei Ohtani ended up having a walk-off home run, went 3-for-5. As a matter of fact, Ohtani and Judge, I started off Monday's show talking about how they picked up right where they left off last year, and they are keeping it up. These are the two reigning MVPs, and they are just on a motherfucking tear to start the season off. But who's not on a tear are the Atlanta Braves, who have started off the season 0-7. And unfortunately for them, there has never been a team that started off the season 0-7 and has even gone on to make the playoffs. Now, we still have a lot of baseball to go, and they still have some big guys coming back from injury with Spencer Strider and Ronald Acuna Jr. But starting the season off 0-7 is not a pretty way to start it off. But the Dodgers are in the opposite direction, starting off the season 8-0. And unfortunately for them, Freddie Freeman is now headed to the DL, or the IL now, the injured list, for the time being. I guess he re-aggravated his ankle injury. He had surgery on an ankle and aggravated in a shower mishap. Must have slipped in the shower or something like that. But he has been placed on the injured list. But I think the Dodgers will be okay. I think they have a few guys behind him who are fully capable of taking his place. Moving on to the NBA and getting closer and closer and closer to the playoffs. We had another team clinch a playoff spot over in the Western Conference this week. So let's go ahead and start off with Monday and a crazy game between the Indiana Pacers and the Sacramento Kings. The Kings are just swirling down the drain like crazy, but this was actually a very good game for them up until the second half. The Indiana Pacers were actually down by 16 points at one point, but then really just got it going in the second half. Nesmith, he ended up with 24 points. Halliburton had 18 points and 11 assists, and they were able to storm back and get the win 111-109. Then also on Monday night, the Lakers were able to get a big win over the Houston Rockets, 104-98. Luka dropped 20 points. Dorian Finney-Smith, he dropped 20 points. Gabe Vincent also dropped 20 points. LeBron dropped 16 points. So it was just an all-around amazing team effort by the Lakers, not only offensively, but defensively. They just were able to really control things, really pretty much had control of this game from start to finish for the most part, which was shocking because the Rockets are playing really good right now. And to get a win like that was exactly what they needed. A big team win, too. You really like to see four guys in double figures and scoring like that. That's exactly what you want to see, especially headed into the playoffs. Then on Tuesday, the Golden State Warriors played a big game against the Memphis Grizzlies. And not only was it a big game for just the Warriors in general, but a big game for Steph Curry. You know, this guy is having a fantastic year. Golden State got the win 134-125, but Steph Curry had 52 points, 12 three-pointers, 10 rebounds, 8 assists, and just had an all-around fantastic night with Jimmy Butler also dropping in another 27 points. Then another crazy game with a crazy stat line. Unfortunately, the crazy stat line was on the losing end of things, but this was an insane double overtime game between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Denver Nuggets. Timberwolves ended up walking away with the win 140-139. But, of course, Nikola Jokic, the triple-double king, had a historic night with a triple-double of 61 points, 10 assists, and 10 rebounds. He is the third player ever to have a stat line like this with a 60-plus point triple-double. And, it sucks that it was on the losing end, but I mean, it is just crazy to see what this guy does every single game. Just a triple double king. That's really all there is to it. But then on the opposite team for the Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards just continues his amazing season as well, dropping 34 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists in a big win for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Then on Wednesday, the Houston Rockets ended up being the next team in the Western Conference to clinch a playoff spot. They got a win over the Utah Jazz 143-105, becoming the second team in the Western Conference to clinch a playoff spot. So since we're talking about the playoffs and closing in on the playoffs, let's go ahead and recap where the seeding is at right now. Western Conference remains insanely close, basically all the way from 2 on down, all the way down to 10. I mean, the play-in, these teams are a little bit more meh, but I mean, it's going to be crazy. Each and every win and each and every loss is counting for the Western Conference, whereas the Eastern Conference, it's pretty much locked and loaded right now. But so for the Western Conference, right now the number one overall seed remains the Oklahoma City Thunder. I doubt they're losing a grip on that with their 64-12 record. Then we have the number two seed right now is the Houston Rockets. Number three seed, the Denver Nuggets. Number four, the Los Angeles Lakers. Number five, the Golden State Warriors. And the number six seed, the Memphis Grizzlies. On the play-in side, the number seven seed right now is the Minnesota Timberwolves. Number eight seed, the Los Angeles Clippers. Number nine seed, the Dallas Mavericks. And the number 10 seed, the Sacramento Kings. Then the Eastern Conference standings right now, number one overall seed, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Number two seed, the Boston Celtics. Number three seed, the New York Knicks. Number four seed, the Indiana Pacers. Number five seed, the Milwaukee Bucks. And the number six seed, the Detroit Pistons. On the play-in side of things, the number seven overall seed is the Orlando Magic. Number eight, the Atlanta Hawks. Number nine, the Miami Heat. And number 10, the Chicago Bulls. So we're gearing up here for a big playoff run here. We've got about, 10 days left of the regular season. And then it is the play-in, and then it will be all playoffs, and we'll see what happens. Because like I said, the Western Conference is really, really crazy. I mean, outside of the Oklahoma City Thunder, anything can happen, and really anything can happen with them. I mean, they can have just a shitty series, an injury could happen, anything can happen in the playoffs. Nobody is a lock for anything, but it's definitely going to be more interesting on the Western Conference side than the Eastern Conference, because the East is just the Cavaliers and the Celtics, and everybody else is pretty much a wash. So moving on to my top 10 list this week, you know, I've started off doing my top 10 NBA GOATs from each decade. So I've left off on the 1970s. So we are moving on now to the top 10 NBA GOATs from the 1980s. And I will say there are a couple players who are ranked in the middle of this list And I know some people are going to be like, what the fuck? But it's like, no, because they dominated the 90s. So I guarantee you there are two players for sure who are on the middle of this 1980s list who will probably be number one and two on the 1990s list because their domination happened in both decades. And when it comes to breaking down these decades, I'm more like, this is the 1980s. So if you dominated the 80s, if you kind of bled into two different decades, you're going to maybe be lower on this one, but be higher on another one because you accomplished a lot more in another decade, but you still bled over into another one. So this is for the 1980s and who the top 10 NBA GOATs of the 1980s, the players who absolutely dominated the 80s. Beginning with number 10 is George Gervin, who was a shooting guard and a small forward, most notably for the San Antonio Spurs. He played with the Spurs from 1974 to 1985. And in my personal opinion, he's basically that guy who basically started this theme for the Spurs. And that is, the Spurs always tend to find this great, amazing Hall of Fame player out of nowhere. And he not only becomes a great player, but they go through ups and downs, wins and losses, great playoff runs, really low moments. But they're always a San Antonio Spur, always remain a San Antonio Spur, always proud to be a San Antonio Spur. They've done it over the years. I mean, of course, you've got the Tim Duncans, you've got the David Robinsons. But it started with George Gervin as the, I would call him the all-time Spur, just because that is kind of what he is. He is a seven-time All-NBA selection, four-time scoring champ, and that's really what he did with the Spurs. He changed them around from being this crazy defensive team to turning into a scoring team who just had this really fast, high-paced offense. And part of it was is he would just score a lot of points. He was the four-time scoring champ from 1978 all the way through 80, and then in 1982 as well. His career numbers, points, his career points, 26,595, 5,602 rebounds, and 2,798 career assists. But as I said, he is really just Mr. Spur. This is where he started. He just started that. Where the Spurs just always find the diamond in the rough, a guy you're not really looking at to be Tim Duncan is such a quiet assassin, but one of the greatest to ever do it. And that's how I feel about George Gervin. Is he just was a solid San Antonio Spur for his entire career and was super proud to be it and was just Mr. Spur. Then at number 9 on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 1980s, Alex English played small forward for a multitude of teams. But from 1976 to 1991, he went from the Milwaukee Bucks to the Indiana Pacers and then to the Denver Nuggets. His career highlights are mostly from when he was with the Nuggets because he had a 10-year career with the Nuggets. They pretty much made the playoffs every single year he was there, and that's where he really shined. One of the reasons why he absolutely made this list is because nobody scored more points than him in the 1980s decade. Nobody. So when you have a career note like that, you have to be on this list just because that's straight up domination, especially in the time where once I get through this list, you're gonna be like, damn, he scored more points than Magic Johnson or Larry Bird. I mean, that actually says a lot. And I mean, Alex English, I mean, who's really, I don't think a lot of people, just a casual NBA fan, has ever heard of him. I mean, honestly, I didn't really know a lot about him until I started doing research on him for this list. And it's crazy, his domination. He just was an absolute offensive force and was basically kind of like the Steph Curry of his time. Not with the three-pointers, but just the way he scored. He just was phenomenal. His career numbers, 25,613 points, 6,538 rebounds, and 4,351 assists. Then at number 8 on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 1980s. Now, this is a guy who's going to be on the 90s list, so don't be upset with where he's ranked here on the 80s, because while he dominated the 80s, most of his domination came in the 90s. And that is Hakeem Olajuwon, who played center for the Houston Rockets from 1984 to 2001. He is a two-time NBA champion in 1994 and 1995, so see the 90s. MVP, a league MVP in 1994. He is a 12-time All-NBA, two-time Defensive Player of the Year in 93 and 94, five-time All-Defense, and just really all-around one of the greatest centers to ever do it. Like I said, in the 90s list, he's definitely going to be a lot higher. But since this is the 80s list and he didn't dominate as much in the 80s as he did in the 90s, he's pushed back behind a few guys. But don't worry, he's definitely going to be top five for sure. But like I said, probably going to be top two. Only behind one that I could think of offhand. Hakeem's career numbers, 26,946 points, 13,747 rebounds, and 3,830 blocks. And like I said, one of the greatest defenders to ever do it. He would probably have a lot more rings if it wasn't for Michael Jordan, which I think a lot of people of that era could say. But he was a dominating force in the center, at the center position. Then at number seven on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 1980s, I have Charles Barkley, played power forward and small forward for the during his 80s tenure for the Philadelphia 76ers from 1984 to 1992, and then with the Phoenix Suns from 1992 to 1996, 10-time All-NBA, and just really one of the most dominating figures of the 80s and 90s. He really was a defensive force, he was an offensive force, and he was still, to this day, is one of the hugest personalities ever, but definitely was a huge personality on the court, especially in the 80s, and you just really did not want to fuck with Charles Barkley on the court. His career numbers, 23,757 points, 12,546 rebounds, and 4,215 assists. Then at number six on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 1980s, this is another guy who's going to be on my 90s list. And spoiler alert, I think we all know he's going to be number one on the 90s list because ain't nobody dominated the 90s more than Jordan, Michael Jordan. Now in the 80s, he was great. I mean, if you look at him just on a statistical level, just breaking down straight up stats, Michael Jordan actually ranks number two behind Larry Bird. He ranks above Magic Johnson, if you're just talking about a statistical breakdown of Michael Jordan. Of course, shooting guard with the Chicago Bulls from 1984 to 1993, then had a brief retirement, came back from 1995 to 98 with the Bulls, and then, of course, he had his stupid little time with the Wizards, but we're just talking about his time with the Bulls because that's really what matters. Of course, six-time NBA champ from 91 to 93 and 96 to 98. Five-time MVP. Now, listen to the years he won MVP. 1988 was his first one, so that's why he's got to be on this list. Then he won his other four MVPs, 91, 92, 96, and 98. He is a 10-time All-NBA selection, 9-time All-Defense. That is another reason why he's on this list, because Jordan, everybody talks about what he did offensively, and of course what he did offensively was insane, but defensively, he is one of the most underrated defensive players of all time, a 9-time All-Defense. That is just crazy right there. Nobody really talks about his defense. Also was Rookie of the Year in 1985, 10-time scoring champion, 2-time slam dunk contest winner, and he won both of those in the 80s, in 87 and 88. His career numbers, 32,292 points, 6,672 rebounds, 5,633 assists, and really just one of the greatest to ever do it, period, in the NBA. But in the 80s, I had to put him at six simply because his domination, of course, was in the 90s. But in the 80s, he was a force. Everybody knew he was coming. Everybody knew. We didn't all know he was going to be the greatest of all time or one of the greatest of all time. But in the 80s was where it began. It just, he couldn't get over the Isaiah Thomases. And he couldn't get over the Boston Celtics. There were some teams that really took out these Chicago Bulls teams led by Michael Jordan. But we could all see the greatness was coming. And it did in the 90s. But he is number six in the decade for the 80s. Then at number five on my top 10 NBA GOATs from the 1980s, I have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He actually was obviously a lot higher in the 70s because in the 80s, it was more passing of the torch for Showtime. I mean, of course, he still had a fantastic career, but he wasn't like he was in the 70s. It was once Magic came in, he pretty much reluctantly passed the torch, and then it just became Magic's team. But, you know, Kareem was still an amazing, amazing basketball player and won the majority of his championships in the 80s, was a part of the Showtime team. And so, of course, he still had to make this list, even though his domination was more in the 70s. He played with the Milwaukee Bucks from 1969 to 1975, and then with the Los Angeles Lakers from 1975 to 1989. He is a six-time NBA champ in 71, 1980, 1982, 85, 87, and 88. So won five of them in the 80s. So had to put him on here. Six-time MVP. won the MVP in 1971, 72, 74, 76, 77, and 80. 15-time All-NBA, 15-time, or I'm sorry, 5-time All-Defense. And then, of course, career numbers, points. This used to be an NBA record until LeBron broke it. 38,387 career points, 17,440 career rebounds, and 5,660 assists. And literally one of the most accomplished NBA players of all time. Then at number 4 on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 1980s, Isaiah Thomas, point guard for the Detroit Pistons from 1981 to 1984, really one of the most dominating teams of the 80s. It was basically the Lakers, the Celtics, and this Detroit Pistons team. And this Detroit Pistons team, they were a force, and they were led by Isaiah Thomas. He was the engine of this team. Of course, you know, they had the dirty guys like Laimbeer. You, of course, had the workhorse in the middle with Dennis Rodman. But Isaiah Thomas was the dude that kept this engine running. He is a two-time champion in 1989 and 1990. He also was the bane of Michael Jordan for so many years to start his career. I mean, it was so difficult for the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan to even try and get past this Detroit Pistons team, and they always seemed to beat them no matter what. Isaiah Thomas is also a 5-time All-NBA selection. His career numbers, 18,822 points, 9,061 assists, and 1,861 steals. And that's another thing about Isaiah Thomas. He played great defensively as well. He was great with the steals, just a really squirrely type of player, but with a hard edge as well. Then at number 3 on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 1980s, I have Moses Malone. Played center for quite a few teams, but most notably for the Houston Rockets from 1976 through 1982, then with the Philadelphia 76ers from 1982 to 1986, with the Washington Bullets from 1986 to 1988, and then a whole bunch of other teams, just a bunch of 1Z, 2Z years with a whole bunch of other teams through 1995. He won the NBA championship in 1983 with the Philadelphia 76ers. He is a 3-time MVP in 1979, 1982, 1983, 8-time All-NBA selection, 6-time rebound champion, and really just one of the most dominating centers of all time, but especially of the 80s. His career numbers, 29,580 points, 17,834 rebounds, and 1,889 blocks. He was a defensive beast, but he also was a beast on the offensive side of the ball as well, and really was a huge player for this Philadelphia 76ers team in the 80s especially. Then at number 2 on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 1980s. Now, I'm just going to say this before I get to both 2 and 1. I think it could be either one of these two guys. I think it's more like 1 and 1. Both of these guys, you could really say, dominated the 80s. Because not only did they dominate the 80s in the NBA, but they also dominated in college basketball as well. Nobody dominated the 80s more than Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. So these two have to be the top 1 and 2. And it's really just semantics on how you are going to put them above each other. Now, since I am a Lakers fan, but also, this is where championships come into play. You know, I always say it, championships do matter. A lot of people these days don't think they do. But when you're making like decade lists like this, and there's very, very few slim margins to say this person is better than that one, the championships actually do come into play in this case. But also, my obvious Lakers fandom is going to come into play in this one as well. But I think either one of these dudes is the answer for number 1, simply because this was the rivalry. This was why people watched. I mean, this really changed basketball completely between Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. So number 2 for me is Larry Bird. Played small forward and power forward for the Boston Celtics from 1979 to 1992. He is a 3-time champion in 1981, 84, and 86. 3-time MVP in 84, 85, 86. He won 3 straight. 10-time All-NBA, won Rookie of the Year in 1980. And he is also a part of the 50-40-90 club. 2 times he's done it, 1987 and 1988. I'm not going to really explain what that means, but basically it means you are an excellent shooter. You are one of the best shooters ever. I think only 1 other or 2 other players have ever been a part of the 50-40-90 club, but he started it. And that just goes to show you, I mean, he was such a killer on the court. and not afraid of anybody, and would literally look you in the face and say, bitch, I'm going to shoot right here, and you're not going to be able to defend it, and that is what would happen. And his career numbers, 21,791 points, 8,974 rebounds, and 5,695 assists, was obviously the leader of this Celtics team, with a whole bunch of Hall of Famers on it, but nobody stood out like Larry Bird. So number one for me, of course, is Magic Johnson, because I'm a Lakers fan, but also he does have two more championships than Larry Bird. Larry Bird has three, whereas Magic has five. So that was a stat I put above him. But really, if you put these two resumes back to back, right up against each other, they're basically equal. That's why I say you can really make a case for either one of these guys to be number one in the 1980s decade. I would not be upset if somebody's like, nah, Larry Bird's number one, because I can't argue against it. But Magic Johnson, of course, played point guard for the Los Angeles Lakers from 1979 to 1991. Then, of course, retired and came back for a year in 1996. He is a five-time champion in 1980, 1982, 1985, 1987, and 1988. Three-time MVP, 1987, 89, and 90. 10-time All-NBA selection, four-time assist leader, two-time steals leader. That's just the thing about Magic Johnson. He was an all-around player. He could actually play every single position on the court, which he has, but of course point guard is his forte. But he was great defensively, and he was just one of the greatest Lakers of all time. Career number, 17,707 points, 6,559 rebounds, and 10,141 assists. So my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 1980s are number 10, George Gervin, number 9, Alex English, number 8, Hakeem Olajuwon, number 7, Charles Barkley, number 6, Michael Jordan, number 5, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, number 4, Isaiah Thomas, number 3, Moses Malone, number 2, Larry Bird, and number 1, Magic Johnson. All right, y'all, enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.